This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. Community Update today is a compilation of some of the leading stories from the past week. A South Bend group is trying to draw attention to concerns about the area's homeless population. The group protested this past week outside South Bend's County City Building. They held signs that read, "No one deserves to freeze and homeless people matter." Their main concern is the weather amnesty shelter. It was delayed for almost a month before it was finally opened last week. Here's John Schaefer from Michiana 5 for the homeless.
I think he cares about the homeless. But at the end of the day, as the mayor has stated, we are not the service providers. I believe the city needs to take care of all of its citizens, including the most vulnerable. And though they may not be the provider, there's more the city can do.
The group wants the city to locate a permanent site for the cold weather shelter. A South Bend state representative who just won a second term last month has resigned his seat. 7th District Democrat Joe Taylor says he has to leave to accept a new job with the United Auto Workers International. Taylor has been an AM general worker and president of UAW Local 5. He narrowly defeated Republican Troy Dillon in the November election. Taylor admits he knew he was under consideration for his new job, but says he wasn't sure he would get it. And in any case, he wanted to keep the legislative seat in Democratic hands. He says the job may require him to move and will take up too much time to allow him to remain in politics. A caucus of Democratic precinct committee chairpersons in Taylor's district will select his replacement. His defeated Republican opponent says he has no problem with Taylor seeking a new job, but believes voters should have known about the possibility before they cast their ballots. A group is proposing a multi-use path that would span 2.5 miles to tie together the eastern side of Granger with a network of paths to the west. The South Bend Tribune reports that under the proposal from the Friends of Granger Paths, the $3.4 million project would connect near the intersection of Bittersweet Trail and Indiana 23, running east on 23, which turns into Adams Road, and ending at the intersection of Adams and Ash. Group President Barbara Fredman says the plan could take years to materialize, but she thinks the path would be a major benefit for residents and businesses on the eastern side of Granger. The proposal hinges on getting a federal transportation grant, which was submitted this fall by the St. Joseph County Department of Public Works. The county department is administering the project on behalf of the group. They expect to learn next month if the grant will be awarded. The grant would cover about 80% of the project cost and leave roughly $700,000 for the nonprofit to raise. The nonprofit plans to kick off fundraising for the project in late January. In the meantime, it's seeking input for a campaign slogan. Ideas can be shared on the group's Facebook page and website. Fredman estimated it could take at least 3 years to raise money for the project and another 8 months to build the 10 to 12 foot wide path. Based on feedback from a survey this past spring, she believes many residents will be willing to pitch in to meet the fundraising goal. The majority of people who responded to the survey live to the south of Indiana 23 and Adams. She said that's why they decided the path would run along the south side of those roads rather than the north. Those who use the existing path on the north side of 23 would need to cross to the south to get to the new path. Engineering studies would need to be done to decide where they would cross. County Engineer Jessica Clark said it would make sense to use the existing north-south crossing at the intersection of Bittersweet and 23. From there, an existing sidewalk to the south of 23 runs a short distance to the east of Bittersweet Trail to reach a Dairy Queen, and the new path could connect from there. If that plan is not feasible because of wetlands to the east of the Dairy Queen, according to Clark, an alternative plan could call for extending the existing path on the north side of 23 about 1,000 feet to the east. From there, a north-south crosswalk could be added to get to the trail on the south side of the road and beyond those wetlands. Elkhart's Police Chief Edwin Bigler is going to be back on the job later this month after serving a 30-day unpaid suspension. Mayor Tim Neese provided some answers Tuesday to questions that have been swirling around the Elkhart Police Department. The mayor is also pursuing an independent review into the department. WSBT 22's Max Lewis was there Tuesday evening when the mayor talked about where things stand.
Mayor Nese released a written statement today saying that an independent review will be conducted into how the department operates. Some city council members, though, think they should be the ones investigating.
Council members Dwight Fish and Brent Curry showed up at Elkhart City Hall earlier this evening demanding Mayor Nese do something about the city's police department.
I'm disappointed.
His disappointment didn't end even after Mayor Nese announced that he would be seeking an independent review of the police department.
We're working on it. You don't resolve this over the course of just several days. You wanted to do it right.
In a written statement, the mayor said that Chief Winbigler will work in conjunction with the outside firm to investigate his own police department. This after the mayor took the extreme step of suspending the police chief without pay because of the way he mishandled an investigation into two of his officers caught on camera hitting a handcuffed suspect. His statement also said, quote, "Officers are expected to perform their duties in a professional manner. I, however, recognize that use of force is part of law enforcement and is often necessary." The mayor also says his requests to the Department of Justice have not been answered, and this is the next best option.
We've been in contact 3 times now unsuccessfully with the Department of Justice. We've left 3 separate messages, each time acknowledging the nature of our concern. We haven't heard back.
The mayor also said the use of force board, which was originally going to consist of only police officers, will include civilians as well. Council members Fish and Curry say the mayor's actions are a step in the right direction, but both say the council should look into the police department as well.
The council has every right to ask questions and demand justice.
We ought to do an internal investigation ourselves.
Now, also in that statement, Mayor Nese called the problems with the police department disappointing, but says it has created an opportunity to make improvements.
That's WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting. Among those watching the funeral of former President George H.W. Bush with deep interest this past week was a Notre Dame professor.
Michael Dush is a Notre Dame professor. He teaches political science at Notre Dame. But for 4 years, he taught at George H.W. Bush School of Public Service at Texas A&M. He says during that time, he got the chance to learn who he was as a leader and a friend. Professor Michael Dush has met several notable people, but he says his highlight was knowing President Bush. The two first met 10 years ago when they taught together at the school named after the former president.
I was involved with some projects where I had to work closely with him.
He says his time with the president helped further his career in political science. It also gave him an insight on who he was, a man that went beyond the politician's touch of a firm handshake and ability to remember everyone's name.
But he was also somebody who seemed to do it not only because that's what politicians had to do, but because he was a genuinely personable individual.
Dush says Bush epitomized the best of his generation as a leader.
Politics that was fiercely competitive, but also polite and willing to recognize that people you run against, people on the other side of the aisle, you got to work with.
But he was also a personal hero for Dush.
He was the first vote that I cast. I voted for him in the 1980 Republican primary, and I'd always admired his career.
As time goes on, Dush believes his legacy will continue to grow.
How important a role model, both as a effective politician, but also as a statesman, that he was, just becomes more and more evident, with each passing day.
Dush says he's grateful to have had the chance to get to know the president, who died Friday at the age of 94.
He lived a good life, and it was great privilege for me to be able to say I knew a little bit more about it than a lot of other people.
Notre Dame Professor Michael Dush with WSBT 22's DJ Manu reporting. Use of recreational marijuana is now legal in Michigan with some limits. WSBT 22's Brooke O'Daniel looks at what's legal and what isn't.
The federal government made recreational marijuana illegal in the 1930s. And now, over 90 years later, it will be legal in Michigan this week. But there are a lot of questions as to what's actually allowed and what people can be fined for. I talked to a Berrien County Sheriff Paul Bailey to get those answers. Each state that's approved recreational marijuana has different rules about possession and the amount an individual can have. In Michigan, each person over the age of 21 can have up to 2.5 ounces on them. They can grow up to 12 plants at their home. And they can store up to 10 ounces, but amounts that large need to be locked in a safe. Places to buy weed won't be open in Michigan until 2020.
If you're possessing 2.5 ounces of marijuana, we can't question you where you got it at. It's legal. So there's nothing to investigate.
Another rule, you can't smoke it in public. It has to be somewhere private, like inside your home.
You can't be sitting in the parking lot smoking it in your car. I think that would be a violation of the law. I'm sure that will be tested in the law in court if we do write the ticket to see if that would be upheld, because it is in the public view.
The sheriff says there is nothing they can do if you use it in front of your children.
Yeah, just like drinking a beer, you can drink it in front of your child. Now you'll be able to smoke it inside your residence or somebody else's residence that is not viewed by the public. There's nothing we can do if children are in there.
Just like with alcohol, you can be arrested if you get behind the wheel after smoking. And officials say they will be looking for signs of marijuana use at traffic stops.
Even though marijuana will be legal, you can still get arrested if you break marijuana laws. If you get caught with over 2.5 ounces, the first two times are a $1,000 fine. The third time, police could arrest you and charge you with a misdemeanor. It is also illegal to give marijuana to anyone under the age of 21.
That's Berrien County Sheriff Paul Bailey with WSBT 22's Brooke O'Daniel. The new legal status for marijuana in Michigan went into effect Thursday, but again, as Brooke said, it will probably be 2020 before any stores selling recreational marijuana open in Michigan. And remember, none of this applies to Indiana, where marijuana remains illegal. Just moments before Wednesday's deadly bus crash on U.S. 31 in Marshall County that resulted in the death of a 13-year-old student, the bus driver was following the law by coming to a complete stop at a railroad crossing. It's a busy highway where traffic is typically moving at more than 60 miles an hour, but a local lawmaker tells WSBT 22's Lauren Becker this law is still a good idea.
I spoke with one of the state senators from Marshall County. He says the law needs to stay as it is. It was put in place to protect trucks and buses from being hit by a train. And without it, he says that could happen. He says the issue goes beyond just the laws.
Chances are you've probably had to stop for a train, or you've been stopped behind a bus or truck at a railroad crossing like these Goshen school buses here. That's because Indiana state law says buses and vehicles carrying flammable material must stop between 15 and 50 feet from the nearest railroad tracks before proceeding.
Sure, the bus driver knows, regardless of what the crossing signals say, that a train is definitely not coming before they cross those tracks and subject those kids to, you know, loss of life or limb.
It all stems back to 1938. When a school bus carrying 39 students met head-on with a 50-car freight train during a blizzard. 25 of those kids died, which prompted lawmakers to seek change. But while stopping at the railroad crossing, the school bus in Marshall County was rear-ended by a flatbed truck behind it.
Our hearts certainly go out to the parents, to all the children who were on the bus, to the entire community.
Senator Randy Head says he wants the law to remain in place. He says eradicating it would cause future accidents between a train and a bus.
So I think the law is where it ought to be. We don't want buses pulling on the railroad tracks in front of trains.
This is the second bus tragedy in the last 2 months for the area. The first one involved an SUV killing three kids who were getting on their bus. Head urges all drivers to be more careful around school buses.
And if the first tragedy didn't send that message, surely two in such close proximity would do that.
I spoke to a school bus driver who told me he's concerned anytime he has to stop at that crossing. He says he's concerned that traffic traveling so fast won't be able to stop in time to avoid an accident.
WSBT 22's Lauren Becker reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.